In 1975, most women in this country, 91%, were married by the age 30. 2025, that's down to 25 point something percent. Now, that'd be fine if women were happier. They're more miserable than ever. So they're getting their degree. They're not having families. They find it harder to find a man because they spend their time pursuing a profession. And they tend to be making more in those instances than the men who they would consider to be mates. And so they're discounted. We are actually now going to be discussing something I would say is the most important issue facing the United States. And I've said this many times. I think that cultural issues have much more significance than a lot of our political institutions. And it doesn't mean that political institutions don't determine a lot of what takes place in culture. But many Americans, you know, politics is kind of a team sport, how people view it, or they view it as something that is just dirty no matter what. So they often don't pay attention to it. But they are constantly affected by and they are constantly inundated with whatever the culture deems acceptable or whatever the culture deems necessary to propagandize people with, which we have seen. We've seen one specific worldview being thrust upon the American public since the 1960s. That's how they've achieved power over our institutions. It really began, you can go back to the 30s, 40s, but 1960s was that tipping point, came to fruition in the 70s, thanks to Marxism, thanks to feminism. And by the way, feminism cannot exist without Marxism. We're not talking about a woman who wants to go be a nurse. No, that was never a problem. We're talking about the idea that men and women are fundamentally interchangeable, and there's no ideal scenario in which to rear children. That's what we're talking about when we're talking about feminism. Mm-hmm. And it does follow in Marxism. We now have marriage rates, and we now have a fundamentally different American society because the central building block is not families. Now, for those of you who may not be aware of the history, and you can go through all the feminists, Rachel Wilson is very good on this. You can go through even sort of pseudo-existentialists, Simone de Beauvoir, Judith Butler. All of them either expressed subversely or blatantly the need to destroy the American nuclear family. So this comes from 1970. The American feminist Kate Millett said that the complete destruction of traditional marriage and the nuclear family is the revolutionary or utopian goal of feminism. Noted feminists often cited, by the way, I'm using the ones who are cited by those on the left. If you go to their blogs, if you go to their websites, Shulamith Firestone.
No relation.
Wrote, yeah, unless revolution uproots the basic social organization, the biological family, the vehiculum through which the psychology of power can always be smuggled, the tapeworm of exploitation will never be annihilated.
Wow.
Then you have another feminist, Linda Gordon, said the nuclear family must be destroyed and we must find a different way of living together. And think about that. It must be destroyed. The biological family must find a different way of living together. That's hard, and it wasn't super palatable, and so it changes to, well, did we say a different way? We meant to say it takes a village. And what do we have now? Well, people aren't getting married anymore. Dudes are moving to the right, few jobs in sight. Chicks are moving to the left, girl boss says student debt. They ain't gonna get hitched and tied to press and send no kids, no kids. Now everybody by themselves. Enough?
No.
Okay. So I want to ask you a few fundamental questions here before I make the case for you and give you some historical data. Do you believe that for Western civilization, and certainly Christian Western civilization, right, the United States, as we want to conserve, that's what we mean by conservatism. Do you mean for that to exist, do you believe that marriage, or at least maybe we're not talking about state marriage, but the covenant between husband and wife is important? Do you believe that that is central to raising children and creating a stable family? And ultimately, those are the building blocks to create a stable community. Do you believe that that central building block, the nuclear family, is an incredibly effective safeguard against government overreach, of course, reliance on government, and being indoctrinated by the leftist elites? Now, I will tell you that last objectively is true. But how important do you think it is? Okay, now you understand the catastrophe that we are facing. And it couldn't have been engineered more effectively over the long game, which is what the left has played. You've probably seen this out there, this table that shows marriage. Can you guys bring it up? people being married by 30. So it was on Twitter. Someone posted, I'm sorry, I can't give credit, but it was shared everywhere, but it didn't actually have a source. Well, we confirmed it. It is legitimate. So in 1975, most women in this country, 91% were married by the age 30. 2025, that's down to 25 point something percent.
Wow.
Men, 1975, 81% were married. It's always been a smaller percentage of the population. Today, or 2025, 16.5%.
Jeez.
So we've gone, respectively, from 91 and 81 down to 25 and 16. Look behind you. That's the tipping point.
Yeah.
Does anyone honestly think that you will not have a not just fundamentally different society, an unrecognizable society when you compare a society where the vast majority of people under the age of 30 are married and having families, and then the vast majority are not getting married or having children? That's the difference that has taken place in really 40, 50 years. Those are two entire, just imagine how different it is in your neighborhood. Even whether you're renting or owning, you go out. What are you going to see? Nine times out of 10, you're going to see a married woman, probably with some kids, and probably a father who's there and in the house. And those kids are going to have a mommy and daddy. When you go to work, the water cooler conversation is mostly going to center around families and those events and perhaps Little League. Today, there is not that commonality. The conversations, if you are one of those, you'd be an outlier. It's actually more difficult to find people to connect with if you are a young, married parent. That is not a small change. That is the biggest change that America has seen. Yeah. And it is what has been the catalyst, or really removed as guards at the gates, that's allowed the rest of this change. So let's look at some other potential correlations. You just heard those quotes from feminists, and you could even go back to, of course, Marx. We see that, you saw that chart. Yeah, it changes dramatically, right? Really from the 70s when it starts going down. Okay. No fault divorce, right? Before the 1970s, divorce was difficult. Divorce was discouraged. When you had a majority of the citizenry married and centering their life around being married and raising children, guess what? They were likely to discourage divorce. They were likely to support your marriage. You had more people you could rely on. You had a larger circle of those who may be older and wiser. No fault. 1969. Huge screw up from Reagan. Yeah. It was pushed, though, to be clear. Really was early pushed by people like Hugh Hefner, Kinsey, because they didn't want men to be punished for cheating. And then it got co-opted by feminists. Well, divorces went up 50%. Okay. It skyrocketed after that. The history of that is pornographers, because before no fault divorce, basically there are three faults. Either infidelity, that was a fault, primary one. Physical abuse was a fault. And if those weren't the reasons listed, abandonment was a fault. Meaning what we now use as breakdown in communications, growing apart, finding it difficult to get along, that was filed under the general umbrella of abandonment, quit. So if a guy cheated, you've been told guys used to cheat with their secretaries and leave them with nothing. Now, if a guy cheated, he paid. That's why Hugh Hefner and people like that said, well, we understand man as a sexual animal. So if we have no fault divorce, the man can cheat and not be punished. That then got mutated into, you know what? No fault divorce is just going to be, we will punish the primary earner regardless of context. Anyone can leave at any time and you split it up.
I can't believe they didn't see that coming, though. You say mutated, but I can't believe they didn't see it coming. They didn't expect women to use this. They called it no fault.
Right.
How many faults?
Well,
none.
They were primarily thinking no fault on the cheating.
Right.
And then it became no fault at all, including if you just quit because you're bored in your marriage. And we see the rates of divorce and who files for divorce most often, anywhere from 60 to 70% of the time, it's women. Let's look at something else. Antidepressant use up dramatically. 97, these are the numbers that we have because it don't go back that far reliably. 7% up over 15%. That's more than doubled in 28 years.
I bet that graph goes on, though. I bet that same trend, I bet, yeah. Since we only have since the 90s.
Right.
I bet if you go back to the 70s, 60s, I bet you that antidepressant use is way down.
Yeah, well,
I mean, it didn't exist.
We're going to, just so you know, we're going to be putting all of these graphs together. So you have and then we'll see if we could perhaps see some kind of a pattern. Or correlation doesn't equal causation. I get that. But like five or six, oh, okay, maybe you start to recognize this pattern here. And yeah. all of these, of course, have been pushed by the left as progress. Antidepressant use, a big reason, by the way, is, of course, the most likely to use them, young liberal women. And a big part of that is young liberal women who are atheists, they're more likely to use antidepressants. Liberal women have abandoned God more than any other group, and you see that in psychiatric drug use. I'm not saying there's never an appropriate circumstance for them. I am saying that the usage therein has gone up dramatically. Coincidentally, I should note, pro-depressant use is also up as well.
So to have you doing something that is forcing you to be like in your body, leading with your body. And what's like the end goal of the samurai training?
No one knows.
The use of pro-psychotic drugs.
You don't get to ask those questions. What's wrong with you, Mom? Why are you so scared?
Come on. Come on. So come on, crazy. Gals. Life's out there. You don't need a pill or a screen to feel.
So crazy.
Rumble Wallet. Keep your crypto safe, even when you are at your most vulnerable.
Hey, how'd you get in here? Go! Stop recording me.
Please do it for social.
Go to wallet.rumble.com to download the Rumble Wallet today. No banks, no fees, no middlemen, just your money, and now your crypto in one secure, easy-to-use place. Get started today.
Not Photoshopped.
Here's another one, and people will say, well, isn't that a good thing on its surface? Well, no. Just no. Because this has been the women with college degrees, women with bachelor's. So in 1975, it was about 20%. Now I believe it's 40-something, 47%. Mm-hmm. And you see a correlation there. That's a separate graph where the more women who get college degrees, bachelor's degrees, the less likely they are to be married. Now, why? Couple of reasons as to why. It's not that the degree in and of itself is bad. It's that that degree is being pursued during a time where women, understanding that those were their most fertile years, they were deciding to pursue families. Women used to pursue families, and then often once the kids were raised and old enough, that's when they would frequently go to college. If you look at women in the labor force, it's been consistently high. This idea that they were only allowed to be pregnant and barefoot, well, it's not true. They just often went into careers later, should they so choose to do so. So it's a timing equation. And then it also results in stat after stat shows us that women, not all, I have to say it, don't want to hitch themselves to a spouse who makes less than them. So you've now reduced the pool of suitors. Now, that'd be fine if women were happier. They're more miserable than ever. So they're getting their degree. They're not having families. They find it harder to find a man because they spend their time pursuing a profession. And they tend to be making more in those instances than the men who they would consider to be mates. And so they're discounted. They're disqualified. And so women are lonelier and more miserable, and men are checking out. Big part of this is Title IX enforcement since 1972. It led to a huge surge in women's college enrollment. Again, this was the goal. You can look at the rhetoric. Mm-hmm. Go to school, get a degree, all the while, no nuclear family. That's the ultimate goal, right? Is to destroy the nuclear family. Then they implemented the strategy. Yeah, go to school. Be a boss, babe. That's going to fulfill you more.
Yeah.
You're a slave. They called it slave labor if you were a stay-at-home wife or mom. And this brings us to women in the workforce. 75 is about 46%. Hey, it's a far cry from no women were allowed to work.
Yeah.
Now it's 57%, which isn't as big of an increase. It's the time at which they are working. Because again, if you look back, women were working later and often jobs that allowed for more flexibility. Again, second wave feminism, if we want to use those terms, I almost feel like those terms, it's just feminism.
Yeah.
They stigmatized domestic life. They told women that you were a slave if you were staying at home. So you go, you pursue a bachelor's degree, you go into the workforce, and oh my gosh, now there's no guy for you and you can't start a family.
You're not a slave to that college debt, which we'll get to?
Yeah. You're not a slave to that boss?
Yeah.
Who's literally paying you to work for him in comparison? Cost of housing.
Britney Spears was a millionaire. She was a slave for me.
That's true. Ooh. She was a slave for everybody.
That's true.
She also really knew how to wield that umbrella. She was like the Penguin. Now, cost of housing. This is a big one. And you might say, well, what does this have to do with, you know, the progressive left? Well, 1975, I believe the average price was around $38,000. Now it's $403,000. That's a 1,000% increase, not accounting for inflation. Let's look at, and if you look at that graph, you see some notable spikes. It consistently goes up But if you get more granular, you will see there were some notable policies that led to it. You look at the overhaul of the Community Reinvestment Act under Clinton. Right, this is where people talk about Barney Frank. Then, of course, you look at the subprime loan market. Right, that increased the housing prices dramatically because anyone could get a home regardless of money down. Then you look at the bailouts afterwards. Like, these people got a home they didn't put money down on with incredibly low interest rates. It should be foreclosed upon, but instead those people were kept in the houses. So people who had saved while banks were no longer taking the risk couldn't afford the down payment. Boom, boom, prices go up, let alone COVID. We have had an engineered society as far as the housing market. Why? To look out for the underprivileged, to look out for the single moms, the leftist creation, to be clear. Let's look at student debt. That's a big one. 1975, overall, it was $8 billion. Today, it's $1.6 trillion. Wow. And a lot of people say, oh, this is the problem because Republicans. No, you guys need to know this. We've talked about it quite a bit in depth. Go check out those previous segments. Link in the description, 11 a.m. Eastern. We always provide them. You can see university prices, tuitions going up as government aid increased. So tuition outpaced inflation by over 300%. The markets that outpaced inflation by a number that defies reason and occurs nowhere in nature. You'll see the same thing in healthcare costs. You will find the industries that have been subject to the most amount of government meddling out of all. You yeah. see it with airlines, you see it with insurance, you see it with big banks, you see it with housing, you see it with tuition. The really simple way of understanding this is schools are incentivized to make school unaffordable. Why? Because Uncle Sam makes up the gap. So you actually want to charge a price that nobody can pay, otherwise Uncle Sam doesn't give you that grant, doesn't give you that scholarship. If you don't say, tuition's $50K, for a student to say, well, I can't afford that. Well, guess what? Your UT, A&M is going to do that. And guess who's going to make up the $40K? Uncle Sam. So you're actually precluded from conducting a school in most instances if you make it affordable and you don't rely on grants and subsidies. It's unbelievable. And when you add all of this up, all of this, right? Let's subsidize school. Let's subsidize housing. Let's send women into school, tell them that they should pursue college immediately and they should pursue a career throughout their fertile years. And also, let's create no-fault divorce so we make this a contract that's a no-win situation for a primary earner. All of these policies spearheaded and championed by the left. Do we see a correlation when we put it all together here and the marriage rates? Let's add it up. All right, let's look at these. Seems like we're seeing a pretty consistent right there, that intersect, that tipping point. And it's one we can't come back from. We need another tipping point. Do it the opposite way. Do it the opposite way. And people say, this is so scary. How could we do this? How could we encourage young people, not get married young at all costs, but how could we tell them, hey, it's what's most fulfilling in life. It's actually a very important metric or indicator as far as economic outcome for both you and the child, as far as mental health, as far as personal happiness, as far as drug abuse, as far as financial stability, which might mean you need to plan on working as a team with someone where one of you goes to college while one of you stays home and you pursue it later. You know, traditional male-female dynamics. Because if we don't try and create another tipping point in this country, and if we don't reform divorce laws, if we don't make the marital contract something that makes sense to people, by the way, who would love to be monogamous and find a life partner. I will tell you this. I, as a conservative Christian, believe that the nuclear family and the covenant of marriage is central. It's a bedrock to the foundation of America. Without it, we don't have a country.
Yeah.
And it's difficult for me, on a logistical level, to advocate that a successful young man sign that contract as it exists. We have a problem. We have a problem. There's a separation between a biblical covenant, what a marriage is, and what the state has made it. And we've got a reverse course.
Yeah. And kind of like you were talking about the housing market, there were several moments along the way that really increased, right, the prices. It seems like there was this tipping point in the late 60s, early 70s, when no-fault divorce, you're pushing women into colleges through Title IX, all of those things, and kind of this feminist revolution happened that really set the track. And then multiple things after that just keep pushing the marriage rate down over and over and over. Yeah. Our policies throughout history on this have been horrible. And we've talked about this not just with women, but with men. Mm-hmm. Not all men need to go to college and have $400,000 in college debt that they now have to go into the workforce and work a job that they hate just to try to pay off and be under that shackle as well. But certainly not women exchanging. And it is an exchange. You are exchanging your most fertile years, not just for 4 years.
Yeah.
But for the debt afterwards, for the career after that, because why did I go to college in the first place if I'm not going to pursue a career? For the possibility that now you probably will have less chance of finding a husband because I'm focused on this. I don't want to settle down right now. And then at 30, that comes along. How can you possibly have a decent-sized family if everybody's waiting into their 30s?
Mm-hmm.
All of the problems that we've discussed with fertility go up massively. I think a geriatric pregnancy is 35 or 34. Mm-hmm. It's not. People don't understand. Like, it is really, really rough.
Yeah.
Now do the timing. How long do you want to be married before you have kids? Now do all of that. How do we expect society to have any other result than what we see today?
Right.
It's terrible. And it, people,
the left sees this as a victory.
People need to get over the, well, feminism and women. You guys don't. It's not that we don't like women. We love women. We want society to flourish, and it isn't working the way we're doing it. Get over yourselves on men, women. It's both in some cases, but the feminism thing has got to end. It's got to go away.
Yeah, culture's got to change because there is pathways that you know, I know it's the most fertile years, but you go to 4 years of college, six if you're getting a master's or something like that. You come out at 24 years old. You work a couple years. You meet somebody in school. You meet somebody in your job space, in your neighborhood or whatever, then you fall in love and you're married before 30. It can happen.
Yeah.
What the problem is, the biggest problem is culture.
Right.
Yeah.
You turn on the radio, unless it's a country, even country music these days is celebrating singlehood, girl bosses.
Yeah. Even single motherhood is like, yeah, just push that.
Celebrating, I chose fishing over my girlfriend.
Right.
Or whatever Brad Paisley song is on at the time.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
It starts with culture. It really does.
Yeah.
I mean, there are mistakes, and we've shown those, and there are legal mistakes.
But those have all been pushed, and that is the culture.
Yeah.
I just watched it. I couldn't watch it because some conservatives out there have been saying like, so-and-so has money troubles on Apple TV. What is it? Margo has money troubles?
Know.
Whatever it's called. It's basically like an OnlyFans thing. But a lot of conservatives are like, this is great, actually, because she chooses, spoiler alert, first episode, not to abort a baby. She's sleeping with her college professor.
Okay.
He doesn't want to raise the child, and she rejects the idea of an abortion. Okay. Got it. And they'll give you those slight wins that, oh, a baby is great. But literally the messaging is you are destroying your life. And I am mourning the life that you never get to experience by having this baby. Do you mean the life of dorm rooms and glorified alcoholism and working as an intern? If you're lucky, maybe making a decent salary at a job. The idea that foregoing that for the joy and miracle of creating and raising life, it's asinine on its face when I say it like that, but that's what people believe. And all of us have been affected by it to some degree.
How does it end?
I won't watch it. I was like, after episode two, I was like, I can't do this.
Well, hopefully, you know, I hope it ends in a story of, wow, look at how rough this was, but look how worth it was.
They'll always give some moments of that. But it's always like 90%, oh, it's miserable, and the baby throws up on you, and the baby is screaming, and you have no friends, and you lose yourself. But it's really nice because you share an ice cream with it on a park bench or some shit. It's like, how about you talk about the meaning of life and finding purpose? If feminism and if leftism, if Marxism, and they are inextricably tied, by the way, the same Marxists back then are the same Marxists today. That's why Black Lives Matter had destroying the nuclear family, the destruction of the nuclear family in its charter. If feminism helped women, we wouldn't have women today fatter, sicker, and more unhappy than ever. There you go. Those are the results. Oh, you're still here, which is a miracle in the age of Instagram and shorts. I think you have some shorts up there. You have an attention span that is longer than that of a fruit gnat. So thank you. I'm glad you probably would like it a lot more if you actually head over and subscribe on Rumble. I'm live there 5 days a week, 11 a.m. Eastern, where free speech is still alive. Go to Rumble. Get off the social media ghetto that is YouTube, with a lot of homosexual activity here on YouTube. There may be some on Rumble, but I haven't seen it.